Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the In the Crease Podcast. I am Dan Abern, former contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, and I am joined today by...
My name is Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse. I still work for Inside Lacrosse. Dan got fired last week.
Yeah, if you did not listen to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast last week, my comments about Pearl Jam got me in some hot water. And I was fired summarily by Matt Kinnear on the podcast, which was really interesting because I was listening to that podcast after work on the way home. So, yeah.
How'd you take it? Were you just like, oh, this is a joke? Or were you like, wait, is this real?
I was actually more offended by D-Fly's comments on Iron Maiden, how they couldn't be anybody's favorite band. That was awful. That's a bad take.
I enjoyed it. I was there for it, and I was like, ooh, all right. I mean, far be it from me, the only part of music that I ascribe to is, like, 90s angry rap and, like, Canadian alt-rock. So, like, what do I know? But you guys got real passionate about it. You got real into it.
Yeah, that one really hurt. But I would like to point out that Iron Maiden has sold about 40 million more albums than Pearl Jam. So, yeah, there's that.
And they're big in Germany, I heard.
I want to clarify. Yes, they are big in Germany. But I do want to clarify my position. I do like Pearl Jam. I just don't get this whole, like, oh, they're the greatest rock band ever kind of argument. I mean, that can be said about a lot of bands, but...
What have you learned from our voting in the polls every week, man? Every team that we don't put number one is someone's favorite team.
That's true.
Every team.
Yes. And also going on this weekend was the Masters. It was a very interesting Sunday night. I had two screens going. I had, you know, both lacrosse games on Sunday night going, and then I was watching the playoff with Justin Rose and Sergio Garcia. So it was very much a my eyes kind of night.
Can I just confess something?
Go ahead.
I don't like golf, man.
That's okay.
I'm out. I was a golf coach in the NCAA. And I was just kind of like, I don't get it.
One of the interesting things that I came across on Twitter during the weekend was a question posed by lacrosse fan, Barstool personality Charlie Wisco. He asked, what is the better golf movie, Caddyshack or Happy Gilmore? What's your thought?
I think there's a generational split on this vote. And I'm going to go on the side of youth, actually, and say Happy Gilmore because... I can put on Happy Gilmore and still watch it and enjoy it. Caddyshack, I'm just like, too much golf, too much gophers. I'm out.
guess which one I voted for?
Happy Gilmore.
I actually voted for Caddyshack.
Ugh.
But yeah. I wanted to vote for Happy Gilmore, but something caused me to go in favor of Caddyshack. I'm not too sure what it was. I actually want to go back and watch each movie and like – kind of put some analytics into this and just say, Caddyshack registered 54 jokes laughed at while Happy Gilmore only had 56.
Oh, are we done with analytics?
I knew you'd hate it.
Please?
Adjusted laughing
Can
efficiency.
Can we just watch games?
Yes, let's talk some games. You know, we've gone on. Let's go to what I think was probably one of the biggest results of the weekend. Maryland 15, Penn State 11. Maryland with the offensive hammer. Rambo, 4 goals. Kelly, 4 goals. Heacock, 3 goals. Maryland's offense, I think, is clearly the strength of this team. But the question I want to pose to you, is Maryland's offense easily scoutable?
I think that they have several sets that while they're in them, you know what to do. But knowing what to do and executing on defense are two very different things. I think Maryland is underrated in their movement off ball. And I think we saw it showcased in like the North Carolina game last week against Michigan. We saw them run a lot of cutters. What you don't see, you see the goal, but you don't see everything that happens before the cutter goes. And there's a lot of double moves on the guy that's guarding them. There's a lot of backdoor cuts. It's really hard to scout for a backdoor cut, man. There's no – I had a coach that I worked with once that said there's no defense to a two-pass set that ends up with the ball across the crease for a quick stick. There's no defense that stops that. And I think one of the ways you facilitate that I actually think another team is better at this than Maryland, but we'll get there eventually.
Okay.
The way you facilitate that is, you know, Maryland is really good at inverting. And they don't invert in the boring way that was like the trend of slow down lacrosse for like most of the mid-aughts. Like, you know, Towson did it. I think the only team that still does it in this slow, plodding, five guys above GLE, making cuts and mamboing, and then one guy behind facilitating all the action. I think the only team that really does that in a dodging way now is Bucknell. But this was like the offense du jour for a very long time. But I think Maryland does a great job with Rambo, running him off of picks, having him catch the ball off the pick and just bowling his way in. And then he's playing a lot better with his head up. Kelly and Heacock are also really good readers of the field. And Heacock's tall enough where he can just get a pass over the net to a guy who's wide open. So scoutable? Sure. Anybody is scoutable. I just think that executing against an offense like this that can be multifaceted is not as easy as it may seem.
Yeah, I agree with the whole multifaceted point because I feel like this is a team that does have, you know, decent athletes both at the midfield and attack position. They can beat you one-on-one. We saw this in this game. A lot of guys got dusted. And they can also beat you with ball movement and off-ball movement. So it's a very varied offensive set. And I think you're absolutely right. You can game plan for these things. They're easily scoutable, but I feel like there's not a lot of defenses that can execute against a Maryland team that is just so experienced. And they're definitely on a good streak. They've had 45 goals in their last three games. But let's move to the other side of the field. And I actually kind of thought that this was like a sneaky bad game for Maryland's defense. They only had, you know, Dan Morris struggled in the first half, had zero saves. He finished with six second half saves. PSU shot 11 for 27. That's 40%. They had six unassisted goals, and a whole bunch of Maryland's defenders got dusted. And go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, listen, 27 shots is not a lot.
Yeah.
So, and Penn State is one of the best executing offenses in the nation, wouldn't you say? In your opinion, not even numbers-wise, not even looking at numbers, don't you think they're one of the top five offenses in the nation?
Yes, and they shot 6 for 7 in the first half. That's incredible.
Sure, sure. And then to go on past that, you know, to go and only have five more goals, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I kind of have to disagree with your thoughts that the Maryland defense had a bad performance. I think they had a bad quarter.
Okay.
And they recovered. And that's the true sign of a competitor and a team that's learning how to become great, or, you know, in Maryland's case, has a pedigree of being great for the last, you know, however many years Tillman's been there. I think that their ability to bounce back and make things close is one of their strengths, and it's a strength that not many teams in the NCAA have. I know that I had a controversial vote this week in the top 20. I put Maryland too because of their ability to absorb the punch and still come out on top.
Absolutely. I think I had them at number 3 this week. I think what Denver did, we'll talk about this later, was slightly more impressive, and I gave them a little bit of a bump. But, you know, I do wonder what would have Penn State been able to do had they just even a little bit more possession in this game. I think it would have been a much more even contest. But, you know, some players kind of got dusted in this game, but I do think you're right. You know, Maryland's defense is smart above all. They've got so much experience in Tim Muller. He's been to a championship game. He's been playing for them forever. Some of the other guys on that unit don't have as much experience, but you can kind of see that they're gaining confidence as they go along, which is important.
Yeah, definitely. And having that, you know, the Maryland, we don't rebuild, we reload.
Yeah.
Right. And you kind of see that coming to fruition now. And again, we talk about this. This is my running theme for later season lacrosse. Teams that have good coaches get better during the season. Teams that don't get worse.
Let's move to another point in this game that was huge in determining the victory, and that was faceoffs, which kind of actually seemed to be a theme of the weekend overall. But faceoffs were huge in this game. I said to Chris Mattis after the game, I was like, dude, this is a game ball that kind of goes to you for not only getting these guys ready to play a very deep and experienced faceoff unit, but also going with your gut and thinking that John Guarino, their number two guy, could actually step into the game and maybe even have a better day than Austin Henningsen, who was red hot to start this game. But Maryland won 20 of 30 faceoffs. And Penn State, I said this on Twitter, was in faceoff hell because they threw every single fogo at that duo.
Yeah, there's also kind of one of Penn State's weaknesses, if you're looking at them as a team overall, is guys in the middle of the field and wing play. I think that is where, you know, you see Arcari win a lot of draws to himself, and you did not see that, obviously, in this game a lot. When you are a faceoff guy that wins to yourself or wins behind you and has kind of your wings, you know, determine who gets the ball, you're just kind of putting it in their general direction, and their ability is what allows the faceoff to be won, you're going to see a lot of disparity. And I think if you – faceoff guys are like matchups, right? Matchups make fights. We say that all the time. Mm-hmm. I think our series match was met. You know, I think he ran into a wall, and it was hard for him to do his pinch and pop and get that ball forward and kind of win it for Penn State. It was also hard for him to control the ball on the draw. And I think Maryland did a masterful job of that. And by the way, Maryland's, you know, wing play is probably one of the best in the nation. So we can't just say Penn State did a bad job. We, you know, should say that Maryland did an amazing job on the wings, which I think is actually more accurate than saying their faceoff guys dominated. I think their units dominated.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I should say that Isaiah Davis Allen and Matt Neufeld had tremendous games, not only on the faceoff wings, but also just playing in general. Matt Neufeld had a great game with four calls, turnovers. But I do want to say, you know, that unit, Henningsen and Guarino, and they're also set to get back Will Bonaparte, who is actually their number two guy. John Guarino has been their number three guy for quite some time. When he comes back, he's been, you know, going through some injuries of late. This has got to be one of the deepest, like, face-off units in the country, and I feel like Maryland shouldn't lose with the way they play at the face-off X.
Face-offs are important, but face-offs are not everything. I'm not one of those people that's like, face-offs are kickers. Face-off guys are kickers. That's not true.
Yeah.
They're integral, but at the same time, you can overcome a face-off disparity with gritty play between the boxes and also great defense and defense that causes turnovers and a great ride. You know, you can overcome a great face-off guy. If you couldn't overcome a great face-off guy, Denver would be undefeated.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because they have Baptiste winning like basically 75% of the time.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's actually very small exaggeration. He's winning 74.4% of his draws.
Yeah.
He leads the NCAA. So if you're looking at overall picture and faceoffs being the determining factor, which I don't think they are all the time, I think it's a great leg up to have on your opposition.
Yes. All right, let's move on to another critical result from Saturday. Duke 11, Notre Dame 8. Huge game in the ACC. Kyle, my question. Duke back?
Duke back.
Duke back.
Duke back. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I don't really have like a ton more to say on it. Like, well, you know, sometimes, again, like I hate hammering home this point. I feel strong about this point. I feel good about it. Good coaches make their teams better as the season goes.
Yes.
John Janowski is a great coach.
Yes, it's just like it's the same narrative every single year. They struggle a little bit early in the season, but come April and May, these guys are ready to play, and that's exactly what we're seeing from Duke right now. And this game in particular, you know, they rode a hot shooting start. You can maybe even say a bad keeping start from Shane Doss. But, you know, Duke's defense has really made a lot of strides recently. I thought Cade Van Raphorst had a great game. And then Danny Fowler is, you know, you can talk about his merits as a goalie within the ACC, but I definitely see a guy who can get them to championship weekend in Danny Fowler.
Yeah. Memo to all goalies. If I praise you on the podcast next week, you will be offered up as a sacrifice. I'm sorry. It's my fault. I apologize. Last week I said Shane Doss had great command of his pipe. You know, I believe I also praised the UVA goalie, Thompson. Sorry, guys. It's my fault. I feel bad. Yes, didn't play well. Didn't play well. I think Fowler is good enough. You don't need a great goalie. You don't need a number one first round pick MLL goalie to win you a championship. That's not how college lacrosse works. I think you need a good defense, not a great defense, a good defense, and a good defense starts with at least good goalie. And I think Fowler is that for Duke.
Yes. And another point I want to make about Duke is that not only is their defense sneaky veteran, I think you look at, you know, the sophomore and the freshman starting on the close D unit and you say, oh, this is a young defense, but they've got important juniors and seniors in ancillary positions. And overall, I think Duke is a very sneaky veteran team. And all these seniors were on that last championship team for Duke. So there's a little bit of championship swagger still left on Duke.
I mean, you could see the swagger in the goal celebrations in this game. You know, like they are ready. Like when they score, they are excited. Which you know, celebrations, a lot is made of them. And, you know, Garnsey had the fish celebration. And we're talking about, like, I think you had was it Gooderding or Bruckner's, like, gun celebration that you keep retweeting? You know, that's part of the excitement, right, of playing offense. It's like you do all this work. And for Duke, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of passing. It's a lot of things that can go wrong. And when you execute in that fashion, you should celebrate. I think there should be more celebrations. I think they should stop throwing flags for celebrations. I think you should do whatever you want. I think it'd be great.
Well, I was watching Duke's offense in this game, and I think I said to myself, I don't know if there's a team that is as penetrating the interior of a team's defense than Duke is right now. What do you have to say about that?
I mean, if you're talking with passing?
Yeah.
Because I think, sure.
This is a Duke team that knows that they have to score in the long run, so to speak. They're not going to get, you know, quick start goals in transition. They have to really work for their goals. And they wear down the defense with passing, and then they find a guy on a sneaky off ball cut. And, you know, Bruckner and Gooderding, they're going to finish in those situations.
You know, there's one other team that I think is a little better at that.
Okay.
You want to guess who it is?
I'm going to say Albany.
No.
Denver. Okay.
Nobody makes the top down diagonal pass better than the Pios. Nobody. It's actually like kind of a high level thing. Like you have to have an attackman who's ready to catch that ball. I think Duke does a lot more behind the cage, I think, and are better executing behind the cage than Denver is in certain situations. But you know, when you were talking about hitting that guy across the cage and having him finish, and all of a sudden he's wide open, naked as a newborn, ready to put the ball in. You know, Duke's good at that. I think Denver's a little better.
Yes. So we are gonna approach a point of contention about this game and about, you know, Notre Dame as a team. But this was a performance that I think my preseason prognostication kind of would have suggested. You know, I said going into the season, I don't see a particularly great offensive cast for Notre Dame, and you know, Perkovic, Wynn, and Garnsey had two goals each in this game, and they kind of carried the Notre Dame offense in this picture. What do you have to say about this, Kyle?
It's April 10th. It's April 10th, dog. It's too late to go in my preseason thoughts. I definitely predicted this. Like, it's too late for that. Don't do that. That's not cool. Like, that's not okay. I think, you know, name me another team that has four guys that can consistently score, though.
That's the thing. And there's only a few teams. I would say maybe Maryland, Virginia, Villanova. I'm not so sure. Maybe Denver. But you're definitely right on that point. And I actually think that this is a problem that is prevalent, particularly among ACC teams, is that they all have particular cast of scorers that they're leaning on every single game. Duke's got it. you know, with Bruckner, with Guterding. We know it for, who it is for Notre Dame. We know it's, you know, Mariano and Salcido at Syracuse. I would maybe say that Virginia likes to share the ball more. They might be the most, you know, varied offense of this group. North Carolina, we'll talk about a little bit later. But, yeah, I just feel like Notre Dame, outside of those three guys, you know, they're really struggling to find goal scorers.
And I think, you know, sometimes, and I've kind of said this before, hinted at it, but sometimes I see Notre Dame play and they look so damn tight on offense. Like they're so scared to make a mistake. They're so scared to not hit the easy pass and take a risk. I think they're so risk averse on offense that it hurts them a lot. It just, if you compare Notre Dame playing to, like, I mean, the antithesis of Notre Dame is like Brown or UVA, yeah, right? Where it's Risk City, like it's Risk Central. Let's shoot from the parking lot. Are we out of bounds yet? Let's shoot that as I'm falling out of bounds. You know, that's kind of that mentality to the nth degree. And then you have Notre Dame on the whole other end of the spectrum, where, like, if the goal isn't an easy one, don't take the shot. And the only guy that doesn't do that on that team is Perkovic. And again, they're not really setting him up to catch and shoot. You need to do that for a volume shooter needs to shoot the ball.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be here and say, like, oh, well, Notre Dame's not doing the right thing. It seems like their plan is to do a lot of off ball stuff. It's just sometimes it seems like that extra pass is not there because it's maybe half a skip or you have to put it through a stick. And I think they're just so regimented that they don't take the risk.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like they need to take more shots and have more faith in their play in the middle of the field. I think their play in the middle of the field is great.
Yeah.
I think the problem is if you turn it into a 6-on-6 game, you know, that's when you can beat Notre Dame.
Interesting point. What do you attribute the tightness to? Do you attribute to the coaching staff and the kind of the way of the style of play that they preach?
No, I just think Notre Dame, if you make a mistake, that's the Indiana basketball school of, you know, approach. I wouldn't even say coaching, just approach. Like, oh, if you screw up, you're going to sit. You know, and I'm not saying that happens, but I'm saying that mentality might percolate throughout all of those guys.
It's interesting you bring that up because that's actually a criticism that my dad proscribed to North Carolina in the pre-Dave Metzbauer kind of offensive sets where, like, some of their players just look so tight and afraid to make a mistake that held them back. And I think I might agree with that a little bit with Notre Dame. But you have a very good point here on our rundown. If you think this loss boots ND out of the top 10, you're just a moron. Yeah, this is still a very high-quality team, in my opinion. I think I put them at 9 this week.
Yeah, I mean, I had them like 4. Like, it's not like Duke destroyed them.
Yeah.
You know, Notre Dame had just as many highlights as Duke did. Duke just outscored them, scored more goals, and won the game. Yes. But Notre Dame still held a Duke team that's capable of scoring 15 a game to 11, and a couple of them are junk. Let's be real. A couple of those goals were junk at the end. So I don't know. I just feel like they're so complete still. It's like little tweaks on the board. You know, little knob pushes. Like, maybe it's a little late to try somebody new on the midfield, but maybe it's time to try that. Maybe you move Perkovic to attack and just have him sit on the wing and Drew Westervelt his life. You know, maybe yeah. You just like have him on an island and like work for shots for him for his hand. I don't know. I think you need to have more volume on offense and play, you know, looser and stop putting it all on Garnsey, pick away from the ball. I think they could invert even more than they already do. And yeah, I just think that they need to move some stuff around, change some stuff up. It's a little late to try that, but I think it's time to just, you know, throw a little spice into the recipe a little bit for the Irish.
Yeah, this is still a tremendous team, and I do think that they can turn it around before the ACC tournament and possibly win that thing. Before we move on into some of the games from Sunday, I gotta say, Kyle, you know what's coming today?
What's coming today?
My blue apron. I'm so psyched.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Blue Apron is scheduled to come today. It's a beautiful day in Baltimore, so I'll probably get some friends over, cook that stuff up, have some dinner on the roof. I think I'm going to go with the Zatar spiced chicken for tonight, but we'll see how things pan out. I might go with the stew that they've got coming my way. But Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/lacrosse. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/lacrosse. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, Kyle, let's move into the Dan Abern is an idiot game of the week. North Carolina.
Those aren't all the games? Are you sure? Is it just one game?
It's just one game. North Carolina 15, Virginia 12. I will start by saying that I am not afraid to admit I was wrong about this one. I did not see a formidable performance from North Carolina coming at all.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to win when you don't have to play defense.
Yes.
Right? Right here. Got to think about it.
Yeah, he's wearing a Patriots cap. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Going into this game, I feel like I always try to predict, you know, what are the scenarios if a team dominates? What if a team gets crushed? If it's a close game? And I went into this game saying, for Carolina to not only win, but dominate, I would have to imagine a hypothetical situation that would require a condition of a near-perfect day at the Faceoff X from Stephen Kelly. And that's exactly what happened. He won the first seven draws of the game, went 23 of 30 overall. A lot of those losses came in the latter portion of the game. The Tar Heels, they just simply took the momentum, particularly in that second quarter, and then they just snowballed it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's funny, like, you know, we basically said that, you know, North Carolina was kind of dead, and then we were like, but wait a minute, UVA, again, Caroline Darney probably listening to this right now because she only fast forwards to when we talk about Virginia. Still haven't won an ACC game since 2014, right? And we still saying that? Like, sorry that everyone has said that and that we are repeating them, but the curse is there. It's a curse at this point. If this game wasn't going to go your way, UVA still, you know, they didn't make it easy except for the first quarter and second quarter, but like they came back, right? They made a run.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of knew in this game, and I think that's why I just couldn't take my eyes off it, despite, you know, Ohio State and Hopkins being a much closer game at that point. You kind of knew that Virginia was going to come back, and they did have, I thought, a very, you know, incredible comeback, a lot of heart shown by them in the third quarter. But that ruinous start, the implosion of a first half, as I described it, was just too much to overcome.
Yeah, it was definitely too much. You have a note in here that you're not going to bring up because I already chirped you about it before we started, that you said they looked gassed. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of like things that make coaches mad when you talk about their teams. Don't say teams look gassed. They will find it disrespectful. I think you can say that about high school kids. I don't think you can say that about NCAA athletes. And I think that Virginia, for as much that they had to deal with the possessions, I think did their best. I think Virginia's, you know, listen, I hate to put this back on the goalies, but imagine Virginia this season with Matt Barrett.
Yes, this is a very interesting point. I feel like Matt Barrett was the ultimate feast or famine goalie. I think he had like zero saves in a game, and then the next week he had 20.
Yeah.
And they could have used maybe a performance somewhere in between, which is kind of what they got from Griffin Thomas, but you kind of felt like he was going to have 20-plus saves in this game for them to win.
Well, I mean, look at all the goals, right? How many of those goals are coming in from in tight? Like two out of the 15?
Yeah.
I mean, there are many goals where you just got to make that save, dude. Like, they're going in near side pipe on a wing shot. Can't have that. Can't have that. I think it's because he doesn't wear sweatpants.
That's a good point. And as to your...
It's not a good point. It's a joke, Dan. It's not true. He still should have saved them coming in on the near side pipe. But yes, I digress.
Dude, sweatpants are for real.
They are. It's an extra save a game.
Maybe facts. Maybe Cart can lend his performance sweatpants to Griffin Thompson.
I don't know. I don't mean capri pants. I mean sweatpants.
But I will say that I don't think gassed is the word I would use. I just kind of felt like maybe that the first midfield for Virginia had played so much in the game that they just simply couldn't run as fast in the late portions of this game. And I agree with you. I think it is disrespectful to say that teams do get gassed, because I'm not in a position to kind of criticize them. I've never been through a Division I strength and conditioning program.
You have another note on here. Speaking of things that'll make coaches mad, Virginia is done. Stand by it.
I mean, their RPI is so out of the picture right now, and I don't believe they have an avenue to get into the ACC tournament, which would be a way for them to boost their RPI, that unfortunately Virginia's at-large bid is looking closer to an impossibility at this point. And it actually kind of makes me upset, because I feel like I agree with Anish Shroff in saying that this is probably the most exciting team to watch in Division One, and that bounce pass by Zed Williams is Exhibit A.
Yeah, so let's talk about this pass for a second. If you guys haven't seen it, it's all over the internet. The craziest thing about that pass isn't that it was a bounce pass. It's that he backed his way in, set it up, turned back, and didn't make an overhand bounce pass. It was a sidearm underhand bounce pass.
Yeah.
Which is, like, very hard to execute. And it's actually – bounce passes are – you don't see a lot of them in lacrosse because – bounce passes inherently put spin on the ball, and especially if you're playing on a textured surface, it'll put more spin on the ball, and it makes it much harder to catch a ball that's spinning. So it's like hitting a slider, you know, that's continuously moving in baseball. It's something that's very hard, and the fact that he made it, the audacity that he had to make that play, you know, pretty unprecedented. I think Zed's, you know, so underrated. We're going to talk about Tuorton later, but man, I don't think he has the actual, like, physical numbers to, like, win it, but he should be considered an inspiring performance out of him.
Yeah. We'll wrap up this game by commenting on Zed's performance, but I do want to turn to Carolina in this game, because Carolina all of a sudden is alive. They actually have a chance to win the ACC regular season title by winning their final two games against Syracuse and Notre Dame. But, you know, this is a point that a lot of people bring up, and Virginia's D once again proves to be the cure for a struggling offense. What are your thoughts on this?
Virginia's D. Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm sorry. I'm putting this on the goalie. I don't want to be this guy, but I'm going to be this guy. North Carolina canned shots from 12 yards out the entire game.
Yeah.
You cannot win in that style and getting ground down, not winning faceoffs, if your goalie can't stop those shots.
Yes. And I think this result particularly puts a spotlight on the style of play that Lars preaches. You have to back it up with pretty, at least above average goalie play. And to be frank, kind of close to superior face-off play, and they didn't have either of those in this game. And you see what can happen when a team that plays like that and is very stubborn in sticking to their style, when they go into a game like this and don't have the possession advantage, this is what happens.
Well, what's the other team that plays like that, right? The team that Lars came from, Brown.
Yeah.
How's Brown doing? Not great, Bob. Not great. Not bad. But not great, because they don't have Kelly and Nett. It's not a coincidence that Kelly went on to win an MLL championship with the Outlaws. He is a great goalie.
Yes.
He's a great goalie. You need a great goalie and an okay faceoff guy, or a great faceoff guy and, like, an above average goalie to win with this style. And I'm sure that they're out there, they're going to be recruiting the hell out of goalies and faceoff guys for this team, because they have everything else. Virginia has everything else to succeed.
Yes.
But if you don't have those two things in the college game, in this style that they play, you can't get the W's. You just can't.
Absolutely. A little bit more on Carolina. Do you think that this offensive performance is encouraging, or do you think maybe it's a one-off just because of the way that Virginia tends to give up big outputs like this?
I'm never going to say it's a one-off. I definitely think it's a confidence booster going into their next matchup, and they needed it. But do I think they have a chance to win the ACC championship? No.
Okay. That's a fair point. I feel like looking at this game offensively for Carolina, everything lined up for them to have the performance that they did. Their midfielders got things moving. Their attack had a good game. To be honest, Luke Goldstock had not had the performances that you kind of need him to get, and he had a tremendous game shooting. They finally found him on the wing for, you know, he's a great shooter. He's going to deliver on those. He had 3 goals and 1 assist. Tagliaferri kind of got out of his shooting slump a little bit. That was, you know, huge. You know, Carolina is a very emotional team, and you need your guys, you know, your emotional leaders to score, because once they see that those guys are playing, everybody else wants to get in on the act.
Yeah, I thought Tags was the key to the game, actually. Seeing him kind of get his confidence back, and, you know, he's always been able to kind of dust guys off the catch and even setting up his own dodge and creating. But seeing him actually execute after doing that is a big, you know, improvement for North Carolina. I think he's the key player. You mentioned Goldstock. I thought Goldstock canned his shots and canned them easily. So I think if you put him in his position to succeed like he was in this game, that you're going to see his goal total and his point total go up. I don't know if that's going to happen against, you know, a better defense, but I think the penetration they showed getting through to the middle, especially from the top down against Virginia's defense, is promising.
Yeah. Quick aside, what do you think of Tagliaferri's MLL prospects?
You know, it's tough. I think that he's probably a second or third rounder. I did my initial mock and my initial list of 75 players that are draftable. I believe it's kind of a thin group for middies this year, for OMIDs. I think he can definitely make a difference on the right team. I don't think he's going before like Salcido or even like Mariano, even though Mariano's more of a hybrid swingman. But Johnny Pearson might go before him. But I think that his athleticism, you know, he'd be great on a team that's already good. He's one of those guys. Like, he would be really – like, he could be a difference maker for, like, the Wizards and kind of come in on that second midfield and just, like, give them grit and hustle and also creation.
So. Absolutely. I feel like he is definitely a MLL-caliber athlete, but maybe he doesn't have – the MLL caliber skill set that would make him an offensive starter. And I feel like Quinn Kesnick made a point that he sees him as being a two-way player in the pros, and I could see that. You know, he might have to diversify his game a little bit. He could play off the wings and be a monster ground ball guy because he's probably going to be one of the best athletes on the field.
Yeah, he's going to have to do that, I think. That's what a lot of people don't realize about NCAA guys coming into the MLL. Like, you got to earn your role still. You can't just, like, there's only a couple, like, the only team you can walk onto and, like, start in this 9-team league right now is Florida. And that's because Florida's, like, you know, a dumpster with flames in it.
All right, let's wrap up this talk on Virginia by talking about Zed Williams' performance. It's kind of a shame that, you know, if Virginia had won this game, I feel like Zed's 3-goal and 1 assist that was the most amazing assist in the history of lacrosse performance would be all that we're talking about.
It wasn't that good. It was good, but like everyone's freaking out over a bounce pass. I don't believe a bounce pass like tomorrow. The execution of the bounce pass is what matters.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not the greatest assist in lacrosse. I'm sorry. I thought Christian Carson Bannister's full field heave to get assisted for Jack Wilson to score against Army was better at the end of the half, but. Whatever. What do I know? I just watch hipster games, right? I don't watch these big ones.
Yes, but shout out Zed for delivering an inspiring performance. I got goosebumps when, you know, they said he was going to show up and he was warming up. And basically, Anish hit some great points, you know, how there's a 10-day mourning period for Native American culture and that he came into this game not practicing all week for the performance that he did have. That's incredible. Let's move on to the other Sunday night game, the one that was more close, but probably, I don't know, this one was a little bit surprising for me. Ohio State 13, Hopkins 9. I think it really just kind of came down to who had possession in this game, and the Buckeyes rode the play of Jake Withers at the X, and Jack Jasinski, the little man from Alabama, on attack. They strangled the Hopkins D with that possession advantage in the final 20 minutes of the game and were able to run away with it.
The low man wins. The low man wins. Can we get more fast, exciting Dodgers in lacrosse, please? And can we not break them out until April? Can we like use them earlier, maybe? Like, I really want to see this trend of giving guys space and letting them go to work a la Mikey Powell back in the day, a la Will Manny at UMass, Joey Sankey at UNC, Jordan Wolf at Duke. I want to see more of these players in the NCAA because all those guys I mentioned went on to become pro legends and also legends for their NCAA teams. I don't know if Jasinski's going to be one of those guys, but I think it's great to run fast guys to create mismatches, help run the offense, help facilitate getting the ball into a shooting position, creating for yourself. I think creating for players that create for themselves effectively are so rare. Players always want to dodge and shoot, right? Like, mm-hmm. You get the ball and you're like, all right, I'm going to dust my guy and score. In the NCAA, like, you can do that a lot in high school. That's easy. That's like the easiest part of playing lacrosse if you're a great athlete. But you get to college and all of a sudden you got a slide coming that's already there to stop where you want to go. What do you do after that? And I think if you have an offense that's smart enough to move out of the way and make that slide harder, the second slide, the first slide, if you make things more difficult by spacing and having guys running cuts and picks away from ball like Ohio State does, I think you're going to have a lot of success. You know, Jack Jasinski, maybe you haven't heard of him before this game, but you're going to hear of him now.
Yes. And I think Mark Dixon kind of made a good point during the broadcast of this game. I feel like Hopkins may have come into this game sleeping on that matchup, you know, not necessarily maybe factoring him into the game plan, and he dusted them.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he played attack, but he was on shorties a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that this is one of the things that Hopkins is missing. They struggle in the middle of the field. They struggle between the restraining boxes sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. Who is their gritty midfield garbage man? Who is it? Who's the guy that's going to get dirty? Who's the guy that's going to fly into a matchup or jump a pick or, you know, knock the ball out and hockey it out to another guy? Who's that guy? I don't think they have one. And when you know, you have this point, when faceoffs fall apart for Hopkins, that's when they struggle. It's when a lot of teams struggle. It's not like, you know, a revelatory thing to say that. But I think Hopkins struggles in particular because they struggle to get the ball back in other ways other than like their ride, which we saw, you know, Stanwyck score off of a, you know, full catching the goalies clear, right? Yeah. Little lesson for everybody out there. I'm going to say this. Never bounce the ball on an empty net. Never. I'm serious. Like, this is one of those, like, it was one of those coaching moments where I was like, oh, yeah, he didn't bounce it. Thank God. You know, it's one of those things where, like, you have to have – all you have to do is pass it in when the net is empty. You don't have to fire it in or bounce it in or, like, use any other advantage other than just passing it into the net.
Absolutely. But I definitely do think that the bottom line in this game, you can look at all the stats, but I think the clear indicator in this game is faceoffs. I feel like that's the bottom line in this game. Hopkins only won 7. And how do you get possessions back when you don't have that possession advantage? You got to get calls, turnovers. You got to get, you know, good play from your goalie. And they kind of didn't get that in this game. They played as clean a game as they possibly could. They only had 8 turnovers.
Yeah, but they were violating at the faceoff X.
Yes.
That's like true. consistently violating. And it's one of those things. You see a couple teams do this. They go into a matchup and the ref calls a different lean or jump faster than another ref. I think it's one of those things where, you know, I'm sure it drives Petro crazy because he's teaching his guys to face off a certain way. His assistants are teaching guys to execute a certain way. And the face off is so interpretive with, you know, the whistle, where your head is over the ball. I mean, it shouldn't be this interpretive, but sometimes one ref can make a difference. I'm not giving them an excuse for this game, but when you violate enough times to give the other team a man up, like, you need to listen to the ref and do what the ref says, even if he's, like, telling you to, like, face off with one hand on the stick. Doesn't matter. He's the one calling the face off. You have to listen to him, and you have to adjust to him. So I think, you know, Hopkins always has a game plan. I think that's their strength, right? But what happens when you throw in a guy like Jack Jasinski that you probably – you know, I think Dixie's a little right here. You probably didn't scout to stop him, did you?
Probably not.
Right? You're you're scouting to stop Eric Fennell, getting to the high side, getting to 5-5. You're scouting to stop Pearson going over the top and sweeping or getting a good alley shot. I don't know if you're scouting to stop, you know, a little water bug Dodger. I just don't think you're scouting that in general. And Ohio State took advantage of it along with the faceoffs. We were talking about MLL prospects. I was ranking faceoff guys. It's actually a pretty deep draft for faceoff guys in terms of maybe none of them will start right away because faceoff is one of the hardest positions to play in the MLL besides goalie and get time. But Jake Withers, man, really upping his case here with this game and this performance.
Yes, and good point. Good on you for bringing up the man down and faceoff infractions, because that kind of was, I thought, the first turning point in the game. Was when Ohio State got two straight man-up goals from that infraction. And they said, you know what, hey, you know, these guys jumped out to a big lead, but we're right back in it. We're getting the goals that we like to get, which is goals out of the 6-on-6 set. And then, you know, this was a gridlock in the third quarter. I think it was 7-7 for 10 straight minutes. But Ohio State had that possession advantage, and you could clearly see that they were just playing their game. And I don't want to say gassed, but I do think the Hopkins defense struggled with those extended possessions, and I think that may have been the difference maker late in the game. You know, go back on my Twitter. There's a good highlight of – I don't know whose goal it was, but it's basically – I think it might be Johnny Pearson scoring on the crease. And I swear, five of Hopkins' six defensive players are all within 7 yards of the cage. They are so tight.
Yeah. And sometimes when you play and try to stop the middle, that's the thing that gets you because you get pulled out. And I think Jasinski was a thing that pulled them out. I think, you know, we talk about UNC as like Ball Watch City or whatever. Ball Watch City is not an exclusive destination. I believe every team can have a residence in Ball Watch City. I don't want to brand one team as just Ball Watch City. But occasionally, Hopkins has little layovers in Ball Watch City. And I think they need to fix that and play a little bit better off the ball. Get their two slide in order. I think their Hopkins two slide is not lit.
Not lit,
fam. It is not lit, fam. Get the two slide in. Get them in.
Yes. Another point I want to make is that I feel like a lot of Hopkins' losses this season seem to have recurring themes. They struggle with the faceoff X, and then their finishers on attack score. And this, I think, was a particularly clumsy game for both Wilkins Dismuke and Kyle Maher. Shaq had a decent game, but they needed those goals from their finishers and they didn't get them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can see looking back on the last couple games they played and their last couple victories, they've almost leaned on Maher.
Yeah.
And when you lean too hard on one player that's, by all accounts, an off-ball finisher, a very good one, but when you lean on off-ball on a guy that kind of needs a little bit of his own service and you don't get him the service, you can't really be upset. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Mikey Wynn's a similar kind of player like this, where like you need to get him the ball in a good position and he'll do the rest of the work. It's a hard life out there for off ball guys. You know, ask Mark Matthews.
Yeah.
You know, he has great point totals, but he's also on great teams when he has great point totals.
Absolutely. But I do think at the end of the day, Jake Withers' performance at the X was the catalyst for the win for Ohio State. You can talk about how the residual effects of that possession advantage affected Hopkins in this game. And now we got to look to Hopkins' next game, which is Penn State coming to Homewood. This has huge implications within the Big Ten. And I got to say, I like Penn State's chances with the way Arcari has performed overall this season. Maybe not lately. He struggled in the past two games. There's lots of face-off depth on Penn State with Billy Lombardi and Drake Crines, also capable players. I feel like, you know, Penn State might enter this game as a road favorite.
I mean, again, these are two teams that don't have really great defensive midfields.
Yes.
So I think we could be walking into a shootout at the OK Corral, at the at the OK Homewood. I mean, we could be seeing a 35-plus goal game here if wow. if everything goes, you know, to plan and the defensive midfield doesn't play well, the guys between the boxes don't play well, it creates a lot of unsettled situations. Both these teams, by the way, are phenomenal in unsettled situations. So yes. I think that's you're looking at a game that could really be a, you know, a classic almost.
Yes, it'll be a fun one for sure. All right, before we move on into segments, we got to give a shout out to our sponsor, Sideline Swap. Kyle, what's your plastic fixation this week?
You know, it's funny. So we were talking MLL. MLL season starts in 12 days, folks. 12 days. I will make you into MLL fans. I will do it single-handedly. It is a great league. You need to give it a chance. There are several Major League Lacrosse-related products on sidelineswap.com. I myself love having some MLL helmets. Do I have one in here? I do. I'm going to show Dan this right here. Well, what team is this, Dan?
Boston Cannons.
Good. All right. If you don't know what the teams are in the MLL, you can't be my producer. I'm just letting you know. But you can get a Boston Cannons helmet, apparel, gloves, dyed heads that are themed towards MLL teams, anything related to the best pro outdoor lacrosse league in the world on sidelineswap.com right now.
Yes, Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more. Or snag unique gear from colleges and, like Kyle said, the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely, list in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit sidelineswap.com today to get started. That's sideline, SWAP.com. All right, Kyle, moving into segments, we got a new one for you. We're yes. down in the steeplechase of the season, so introducing our newest segment, Tawara Watch. Kyle,
really? That's what we're calling it?
Tawara Watch.
Analogy school. We need to go back. What do you got for me? You want my top five?
I want your top five. I want your finalists if the season ended today, maybe.
I went controversial with my top five because I thought you would go traditional. So I kind of, you know, two guys are definitely going to be on our list. Okay. I picked three other guys that maybe are a little outside the box. First off, my number one candidate, Connor the Magician Fields at Albany, averaging 7.22 points per game, leads the nation by far in points per game playing for the Danes. What do you think of that?
I would agree. He's going to be on my top five list. I think he's clearly on everybody's top five list, but continue.
But is he one on yours?
He's not. You'll wait and see.
Then you're wrong. We can stop. You're wrong.
No, I'm right.
No, you're not. Number two. Again, this is where we get controversial. Pat Spencer from Loyola. 37 assists, second in the NCAA overall. Had a killer game against Lehigh this past weekend. He's only a sophomore, but I think he's a great player. What do you think?
Okay.
Yes? You're like, uh-huh. Okay.
You're an idiot, Kyle.
No, that's my line. Number three, Mr. Sowers, the Princeton Tiger. I know you love him because you make videos about him every week. Averages over two goals a game and three assists a game for the Tigers, who are currently tied for second in the Ivy League at 2-1.
Yes, Michael Sowers is currently not on the Torch and Watch list, but hopefully he will be added down the stretch.
It just means the Torch on people don't know what they're doing. Number four, this is where we get weird. Mr. Baptiste, the King Tuna himself, Trevor Baptiste. We mentioned this earlier, an absurd 74.4 win percentage at the X. You cannot have a conversation about the Tawaraton without Baptiste.
Absolutely.
Number five. This will shock maybe all of America.
Okay.
Benny Pugh. The best goaltender in the NCAA, and it's not close. I know he plays for Richmond. I don't care. He's beaten Duke. He's beaten scores of teams. 69.7% save percentage. How do you lose when your goalie saves 70% of the shots?
They don't lose often.
No, they do not lose often. He does a great job for a team very much on the come up. And if they win the SoCon, no one – I tell you what, no one wants to play Richmond. Not with Brandon Hines at LSM, not with any of these other great defensive players they have. Also, both those guys very high up in my MLL draft ranks.
Yes, if I was
– let me hear your five.
All right.
Give it up.
So I just want to clarify first that I chose only players – well, that's not true. I wanted to think, you know, who are the players that are on the Tour Time watch list and also likely to be postseason contenders, because 12 of the 16 Tour Time winners were on a Final Four team, and every Tour Time winner was on at least a quarterfinal team. So, you know, we don't want to say it's a postseason award, but postseason performance does come into play with the Tour Time. Do you want it in descending or ascending order?
Let's go. Let's flip it, and you can go descending.
All right.
We're ascending. Sorry.
Number five. My boy, Matty Rambo.
Yeah.
Does not have the points, but I think that down the stretch, I think people will determine that his overall career will come into this. He's going to probably go down as the highest, you know, most prolific Terp of all time when it all said and done. I think he will be at the ceremony in June. Number four, Pat Spencer. Kid is having an absolutely amazing year. And quite frankly, not with as great a cast around him as he had last year. Would you say so?
Very fair. Very fair.
Number three, I'm going to agree with you. Benny Pugh, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Nearly wow, 70. You're on the Benny Pugh train? All right.
You got to give respect to goalies, man. You got to give respect to goalies.
I don't usually, but.
Nearly 70% of his saves made. My number two player. This is where you're going to hate me, man. Connor Fields, man. He's my number two.
Is Sowers your one?
No. My number one is Trevor Baptiste.
Okay.
Because
I don't hate it.
Because I feel like I look at him and I see two things. He's quite clearly a prime reason why Denver dominates like they do. And if you watch their game against Villanova, he was just sublime in that game. He like casually wins over 20 faceoffs a game. And then I look at that 74.4% win percentage. And I just say, that is an unreal, gaudy percentage.
Yeah.
Like imagine, winning 74.4% of anything.
Yeah. Like imagine Benny Pugh and Trevor Baptiste on the same team.
Yeah.
That's it. You know who would benefit from that? Virginia. Sorry. Sorry. Sorry, Virginia. I'm not picking on you.
But let's talk about this. Winning over 50% of your faceoffs is considered being a good faceoff man in the landscape of Division I right now. If you're into the 60s, you're considered elite. And then Trevor Baptiste is just like, I'm winning 74%, and I just think that's unreal. I feel like he is clearly the number one Tour Time finalist prospect right now.
Yeah, like, and not to mention he scored three goals and had a helper against Villanova.
Yes. I also got to just say, he's an incredible athlete. I mean, this is an NFL running back playing the faceoff position, 5'10", 225.
Yeah. Big dude's role.
And great dude, like you said, three goals, one assist in that Villanova victory. So that is our Tour watch as of the second weekend in April. It'll be interesting to see how it changes with the highs and lows of the season as they go along. Let's move into Weird Watch of the Week. I think this is Kyle's favorite segment. You go first.
So I was doing scoreboard in the IL War Room this weekend with our own Chris Rosenthal. Hallie Quilladin, the women's editor, also made a cameo. When they came in, I had two TVs going. There wasn't a game going yet. It was about 11 o'clock. I was watching Die Hard on one TV and Aliens vs. Predator on the other. And I got to tell you, one holds up and one does not. So those are my weird watches before the game. Put me in a warlike mentality for scoring the games. And we'll get to a lot of the scores that, you know, in some of the games that I watched and observed during that day. But yeah, that was my weird watch. I wish I had something better, but I really want to comment on yours. So take it away.
My weird watch of the week was during the Carolina Virginia game last Sunday night, when Quint and Anish did not know what poutine is. Now, for everybody out there listening, poutine is a popular Canadian snack dish, which is basically French fries with gravy and like easy cheese or cheese curds on it. And it was hilarious to know that both Quint and Anish had no idea what that was. And we're like trying to figure it out on the broadcast.
I thought it was a bit. And then I was like, wait, it's got a high glycemic index and it's not paleo. So Quint definitely doesn't know what it is. Right?
Yeah.
I feel like Anish went to school at Syracuse.
Yeah.
Dual too close to the Canadian border for you not to know what poutine, which, by the way, the correct pronunciation is poutine.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, poutine's fine because we're Americans. We can pronounce things however we want. But I found that a little specious. But, you know, listening to the banter definitely was worth people not knowing what it was.
Yeah, it was the non-lacrosse highlight of that game where they're like – guys, we don't really know what poutine is. We're being told what it is by our producer. We're still trying to, you know, get a picture in our head of what it is. It sounds like cheese curds with French fries. And I'm like, it's poutine. Come on. Like, maybe this is the millennial in me speaking, but I love poutine.
Yes.
It's bad food. It's food, of course.
I think we have to assemble some poutine for them in the press box at championship weekend. In Gillette. Yes. I'm pretty sure I got enough connections. I can make some calls. We can. I want to watch both of them eat gravy and cheese curds on fries. That's what I want to see. We're going to film it. It's going to be our social media. It's going to be on our Snapchat.
Relaxing with Paul with Anish eating poutine.
It's just the Snapchat is not them talking at all. It's just like all of them just like are huddled around it, eating it and being like, all right, I like this.
Yeah, but what a world of the ESPN broadcaster where Paul Carcaterra doesn't know what a dog park is, and then Anish and Quint don't know what poutine is.
You know what was worse? A Police Academy reference.
Hey, I enjoyed that part. I was like, oh, ooh, Police Academy.
I cringed watching it. I cringed. Chris Rosenthal sitting next to me, and he's like, ooh. And I was like, yeah, ooh. Ugh. I don't know. Who's watching this game and knows who Hightower is? Nobody. Come on. Come on, dog.
I do love some of the interesting references that Anish makes. Like, I think he casually threw out a Hemingway The Sun Also Rises like reference in last night's broadcast. I was like, wow, we're getting real deep with our references tonight.
Yeah, Anish has actually a rivalry analogy school to mine, and his is very successful, and mine's a startup. So, you know, I feel like anything he throws out is gold. I think maybe some of the other guys could go to either one of our schools and benefit from the tutelage.
Kyle, let's move on to movers and shakers. I'll start. Mine is very brief. Duke moved into my top five. They're definitely a big mover. But a team that is just steamrolling up the polls right now is a team that was actually there at the beginning, and that's Yale. I think I moved them to 11 above Rutgers this week in my top 20 poll. They're absolutely killing teams right now with a bunch of freshmen.
They killed St. John's this week. They like took them out to the woodshed and like put them in the chipper. It was unreal. I was scoring the game. It was a weekday game and I was scoring. And I was just like, oh my God, just like let him get some goals. It was like, I think it was maybe 18-3 in the fourth quarter, and like Yale was like, nope, still going. Final score, I think it ended up being like 21-6. But you're absolutely right. Yale is no joke. They are 4-0 in the Ivy League. They're the only team that's undefeated in the Ivy League with two games left. I think they have everybody's number, and I think it's they're not going to be an easy out in the NCAA tournament. I already think they've won the Ivy because I don't think the only other team that matches up well with them is Princeton, and I think that they can shut Princeton down by closing down the door on GLE on Sowers.
Good point. I actually heard that Yale like came to the St. John's game with a body bag. They had actually recycled the one that they had used last week, and it was still bloody and all that. And they said basically, "Oh yeah, we're going to put you in this.
Yeah, clean it out, clean it out." Bulldogs just dragging you off into the distance. It's tough.
All right, let's move into the scoreboard rundown. You know, there were a lot of other great games this weekend. Let's start with another one that was on TV Sunday. It was actually a great broadcast. Denver 16, Villanova 11. Like we already mentioned it, Beast Baptiste, man. 23 of 28 at the X, three goals. Alex Reddy, 13 saves. Best game of the season, you say, for Denver?
Best game for Alex Reddy, for sure. Denver definitely rose from the ashes of their burned village in the mountains as it was set to fire by OSU a couple weeks ago, and came back and held Villanova, I would say, which is an accomplishment in and of itself. It wasn't just faceoffs. It was good defense. And like we mentioned before, nobody does the top-down diagonal cross-cage pass like the Pios, absolutely scoring bunny layups against the Villanova defense in this game.
Yes, the one gripe I have with Denver is that I don't see a lot of their midfielders that will beat their man in an individual matchup. And I feel like that could hurt them down the road if teams try to make them beat them with that ball movement.
I think you saw Cannizzaro handle the ball a little less, I think, than you're used to seeing him in this game. He was the beneficiary of a lot of their passing in this game. So I think that's kind of a trend coming up. I don't think that they, again, I don't think they necessarily have to beat somebody. I think the guy on the backside has to beat somebody to a spot and catch and finish. I think that's where they're getting a lot of their work done. And you know, with a great offense like that and a great mind on the sidelines and in Tierney and Brown, that's what you're going to get is a team that can score out of nothing.
Yes. Next game on our slate, the I Don't Get the Patriot League game of the week, Colgate 10. Navy 4, Navy slide just continues.
Hey, let's go back to my preseason prognostication, shall we?
Yes.
Isn't that what we're doing this week?
Yeah, I had Navy in my top 10.
Navy, can't score, can't win. Can't score, can't win. Colgate, one of those teams, Patriot League, you never know what you're getting.
Yeah.
You just don't know game to game. You know, there's people that are like, oh, you overcover the Patriot League, you overhype it. At Inside the Cross. No, we don't. We don't. We watch these games and we're like, all right. I mean, Loyola smoked Lehigh. Lehigh beat the crap out of BU. Like, Army is the only constant, right? Yeah. I mean, it's all of these teams that just battling. And, you know, it's going to come down to the very end of the season to see who makes this tournament. Patriot League is like the first conference tournament, so they're going to be done pretty quick. Another Patriot League game we got to mention, Army 11, BU 10. Cole Johnson, he's a bad man.
Yeah, bad
man.
Bad dude.
Scored one of the first goals of the game and scored the goal to ice it for Army, who held off BU. I believe they got three shots off. I was watching this. This game was streamed on Twitter by college insiders. And, you know, you really have to give it up for Army. I don't think they're getting enough love. I have them in my top 10 the last couple weeks. Yes, rated 10. I probably should have them a little higher. But, man, the Black Knights, they're here to stay. They win with defense, and they win with execution. And they play super hard in the middle of the field. So they're not going to be an easy out in the Patriot League. And if they win that thing and they're going into the NCAA tournament, look out for Army.
Yes, and another thing we got to mention about BU is that they're going through a very similar narrative where they have such great regular season results, but their play within the conference is troubling, and they are back on the cusp of not making the Patriot League tournament. And, you know, Patriot League is not getting any more than that automatic qualifier to the NCAA tournament.
I totally agree with you. All three of their losses are in the Patriot League. So.
Yes. And another thing about Army is that I think that this is the team clearly to beat in the Patriot League. Everybody says that Loyola is coming for them. I don't see that right now. I think Army crushes them.
Yeah, Army does a good job killing the ball when they need to, too. And against Loyola, that's key because if you give Loyola protracted possessions, they will put up points on you. It doesn't matter who you are. They will. Pat Spencer will find a way to test the Raptor fence and score on you.
Next game on our slate, Brown 11, Penn 8. Brown is now tied with Princeton for second in the Ivy. They're 2-1 with three games left.
Yeah, so we mentioned earlier Yale is 4-0. They're the only Ivy League team that has played four games. So there's a couple teams at 2-1, and then another team that's Cornell has played four games. So they're 2-2. They just beat Harvard, which is our next game we're going to talk about. Ivy League is very competitive. I still think Yale is the team to beat. But, you know, with Cornell beating Harvard, I actually love watching Harvard play. I just feel like they're a couple players away from being a really good team. I think right now they're kind of teetering on that kind of middle scale where I actually thought they were going to be bad this year. They're definitely not bad. The coaching has brought them up to an acceptable level. I just don't think they have enough bodies or enough experience to beat teams. Morgan Cheek is still, by the way, in the top – I believe he's in the top five in goals in the entire NCAA. He's still unstoppable. It's just they don't have enough support for him coming out for the Crimson. But Cornell kind of making a little bit of a resurgence here. There's still games to be played. But, you know, if they can execute down the stretch, everybody's beating Dartmouth. So, I mean, that's kind of an easy win for whoever's going up against them in the next couple of weeks. But, yeah, Ivy League's wild. I think you're going to see some great stuff come out of those conference games.
Yeah, Cornell did have that upset victory 12-9 over Harvard this past weekend. Cornell's 2-2, Yale's 4-0 in the conference. Cornell plays number one ranked Syracuse on Tuesday, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Cornell knocked them off with the way that, you know, number one ranked teams tend to fare of late in this crazy season.
I don't buy it.
Okay.
I just don't, and it's not because like Cuse is too good. I just think that Cornell puts together good offensive runs to win games, and I just don't think their defense is all that legit. I think Knight bails them out a lot, and I don't think you can have a goalie bail you out against Cuse. I think you need more than just a goalie.
Yes. Final game on our rundown, Providence 13, Georgetown 7. You got a whole lot of thoughts about this one, Kyle.
Ooh, Friars coming. Ooh, they coming for you, man. Providence is the most underrated team in the NCAA.
I actually would agree with you.
Defender Gerard Newman is a real MLL prospect. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that this is a team that could – I would not be surprised if they were a bid stealer, you know, come NCAA tournament time, if they're able to – beat Villanova and then maybe beat Denver in the Big East tournament. It's a real defense.
They're hosting the Big East tournament.
Yeah.
So you already got home field advantage. They just have to make it. And this game was a statement game for them. I think a lot of people rate Georgetown as the best worst team in the country record wise. But like, I don't know, man. I think Providence has all the tools to, you know, pull upsets. They have a great goalie. They have a shooter and a creator in Brendan Kearns that does not care. He shoots every shot like it's going in. He's the why not Westbrook shooter of the Big East. Gerard Newman, as I said before, is an exciting MLL prospect, 6'4". They list him at like 190, but I think he's more like 220. I just think that this team is destined for great things. I saw their first game of the season. It took OT to beat BU, who I thought was a much better team. I still think they're good. They still have 9 wins, by the way. BU does. So I think Providence is coming. Don't sleep on the Friars. Also, shout out to their equipment guy. They look great. Great helmets, great decals. I mean, listen, looking good helps. It does help.
Look good, feel good, play good. That's what I was used to say in high school. All right, Kyle, that's pretty much all we have to talk about. A very lengthy podcast, of course. They seem to be getting longer as the season seems to get even crazier. I think my last week prediction that April is going to be the gauntlet of the season is coming true because all these conference results are just so very – I don't know if they're not – I wouldn't say that they're surprising, but there's definitely so many implications after every game.
it's an intense time to be a lacrosse fan, and we're happy to help you guys out, give you some analysis, give you our viewpoint, and get you prepped for this week. Make sure to listen to the rest of the Inside Lacrosse podcasts. D-Fly and Dixie, Quint and Terry, and our D2 and D3 men's podcast hosted by Matt Kinnear.
Yes, and if you like the podcast, please give us feedback. Sorry, Scott Hensley, for saying John Hopkins last week. I realized by mistake I said someone's going to kill me for that. Yeah, give us feedback on Twitter or email. Tell a friend, and please subscribe. I'd mention where to follow me on Twitter, but I think you know where to find us.
Yeah, I'm still going to give it out, at the Kyle Devitt on Twitter and Instagram, THEKYLEDEVITTE. Last week, I Jedi mind tricked Matt Kinnear into spelling out his as well. I only spell mine because everyone forgets the E on the end. It's the only reason. It's not for ego, guys. Just everybody forgets the E. So thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. We will check you guys out next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Inside the Cross Podcast.